Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson.
Welcome back to another episode of Life, Death, and the Law. I'm Sean Garner, attorney at Deason, Garner, and Hanson. We do estate planning, but for fun, we come in and talk about politics and what's going on in the community. Right now, of course, we're in an election year, so it's hard not to talk about what's going on with the elections. And, of course, it's a two-candidate race. We got the rematch of Joe Biden and Donald Trump. And I find myself scratching my head thinking, how did we get here again? And I know that question gets asked a lot, but really, I tried to listen to a speech from both of them last night, and it was so miserable. It was just an awful experience. Trump most of the time talked about how the teleprompter person wasn't going to get paid because it fell over and the podium was unstable. And I heard a little bit about policy, but mainly about how great he was in the past and how he won Minnesota in 2016 and 2020, and he's going to win it again, but this time we're not going to let them steal the election. All of which is maybe true, but I don't really care. I want to know what's going to go forward with the country. Joe Biden, it's just a cringe fest. And so it's hard. John Stossel is one of those guys I grew up with on 2020. He and Barbara Walters used to do that 2020 show where they would go and they would, you know, investigate businesses and disclose all of their corrupt acts and how they were trying to take widows and elderly people and take advantage of them by charging exorbitant fees for whatever services. And anyway, he earned a name for himself through that. I think he was an anchor on CNN and Fox. But either way, he was your traditional reporter that chose his story and then would dig deep into the story. He now has his own channel, and it's a fantastic channel. I like his little five-minute bits that he will expose topics that we really should be understanding more about and bring them to light. And I think that he brings on guests that really try to bring opposing views. So the guest that he brings on this show is Chase Oliver. And many of you may not have heard his name. That's the whole point of why I'm going to play this clip right now, is Chase Oliver is the Libertarian candidate during this election. He's most likely going to be on every ballot, but he's most likely only going to get 1% or maybe slightly higher of the vote. A lot of people call him the spoiler, kind of like RFK. But you hear a lot more about RFK than you do Chase Oliver. Chase Oliver, honestly, this is the first time I've heard about him. And I like to consider myself a Republican that leans libertarian. I like most of the libertarian views, but not all. And so I'm going to play this clip from John Stossel, and he's going to interview Chase Oliver. He's going to get the views from the Libertarian Party, or at least Chase Oliver's views on the Libertarians. And I want to pick this interview apart, Cody, get your input on it. I know that you kind of lean the same direction with more Libertarian type.
Freedom. Freedom, what's traditionally, you know, what our country stood for.
Okay. And Thomas, you too.
Sure.
I don't know if you do or not. Do you?
Do I lean more libertarian?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say not all the way, I think, as Chase Oliver is. I lean towards good ideas.
Okay, so let's play this and see what's a good idea and what's a bad idea.
I will put a libertarian in my cabinet and also libertarians in senior posts.
Donald Trump recently spoke at the Libertarian Party's national convention.
Pretty good.
He asked Libertarian delegates for their support.
You should nominate me or at least vote for me, and we should win together.
There were cheers, but mostly boos, and party members chose this man to be their nominee.
I'm fighting for a world set free in our lifetime. Are you fighting for a world set free in our lifetime?
Chase Oliver is the new Libertarian presidential candidate. But to my sadness, I've discovered when I ask people, what's a Libertarian? Most don't know. What's a libertarian?
A libertarian is someone that allows you to live your life in peace, free from government intrusion. If you're not harming anyone, your life is your life, your body is your body, your business is your business.
But don't Democrats and Republicans basically believe that?
Well, they love to talk the talk about that stuff, about freedom and liberty, but in reality, they could put all kinds of government programs that invade your privacy, your business, your life.
He runs ads about that.
The only thing Democrats and Republicans can agree on is how to spend your money out of thin air and devalue our dollar. Just about every program could be better done through the private marketplace.
What about people who are helpless?
Just because I don't want the government to help people doesn't mean that I don't think we need to help people.
Private individuals and charities, he says, can and do help people, often better than government does. But politicians say government can help more if we just raise taxes on the rich.
It is time for a wealth tax in America.
Shouldn't the rich?
That was Elizabeth Warren talking about a wealth tax, that the rich should pay more. Cody, what's your thoughts on that? Should the rich pay more? They have more?
I think there should be a fair, flat tax that we've always talked about, you know, but we obviously need to look at our whole tax system because it's
out of control. So basically, you think the rich should pay less because a flat tax right now is progressive tax, where the rich pay a higher percentage than the middle class and I don't know if you call them the lower class, but maybe the
plebeians.
We don't use peasants yet.
Okay.
No,
yes.
We don't use those yet.
So, yeah, the rich already pay more because they pay a higher percentage than people that are making less money. And I think about $500,000 per household is the top income limit. And if you're there, depending on what state you're in, you're paying between 45 and 55% of your income. That's quite a bit.
But you should have an equal stake in it. And you know what? You should also devote your time to it as well. You know, there should be, I don't want to say like a national draft, but there should be some sort of system where we have you're invested. You know, you've put your time in after you've completed high school or whatever.
Yeah, okay. I think a progressive tax system is fundamentally unfair. Like when people say that they want you to pay your fair share, what they mean is they want you to pay your unfair share. If the rich are paying more percentage-wise, it's fundamentally unfair. If I've got to pay 30% because I just happen to make more money, like look at it goes all the way back to the New Testament and the widow's mite. Like, why was the widow's mite a sacrifice? It was the same 10% that everyone had to pay, but because she had so little, it didn't matter that her tithe was so little. It's the same thing for taxes to me.
So what about the poor then? Because if we don't have the government safety nets to pay for the poor, what they just said with this Chase Oliver's libertarian view was the government should let people alone. That means let them alone to succeed, let them alone to fail. And isn't that just unconscionable to let the poor die in the streets? And his response to that was, well, there are private charities that can do things more efficiently than the government. Is that going to really work? What's your thoughts on that?
I mean, what if we were to stop? Right now, we put roadblocks in place so private charities can't provide aid to certain groups or certain people. Like, what if we stopped doing that? What if we allowed the churches to go back and to feed people and educate people? And obviously, there's more to it, but
I didn't realize churches weren't able to do certain charitable acts.
Some of them have stopped. Like, for example, there was a program where a church got sued because they would take food that was not being sold and they would go and donate it.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But, you know,
was that the FDA type thing?
That kind of stuff. It's out in California. But point being is, if somebody gets sick and now you're the one liable,
okay,
you know, it kind of deters people from helping.
I think that there's this myth that the government has to provide welfare for its people or else nobody will. And the vast majority, I think, of our history prior to FDR's time period when he was president, it was up to private organizations to provide charity and welfare. We have churches, and this is documented. I've mentioned this in the show before, but Alexis de Tocqueville, who's a famous French, you know, author, and I guess I don't know if he was an economist, but he wrote a famous book.
Yeah, he's a political philosopher.
Yeah, yeah.
Well-recognized, yeah.
Democracy in America is his famous work. And in that volume, he talks about how America could not function without its robust private charity system that he observed in the 1800s, where churches were providing soup kitchens, people were, you know, going into their own wallets to pay for other people. And I think the side effect of that is also it's spent responsibly. If you know that you're getting something from somebody directly out of their pocket, you're going to be more conservative with what you ask for. You're going to be more grateful. less entitled. And I think we should have a step back towards that mentality and that mindset as a country.
You think that'll work?
I think it would.
You know, they say like there's government's more responsible the closer it is to you. So the further you get away, like in Washington, you know, you're less connected to it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the same thing with charity.
Yeah.
I think Thomas makes a great point there.
Yeah. You know, after I graduated school, I had a ton of debt and we were paying back student loans and my income literally wasn't sufficient to pay for just everyday necessities. And of course our necessities here in America are high level compared to around the rest of the world. But what I felt was a necessity was, a basic car that ran, you know, and I was getting, it was only a $3,000 car. So just the bare minimum that it would actually start reliably every morning. And renting a house, it was a two-bedroom house, it was actually a three-bedroom house, but it wasn't in the greatest shape. And still, we were living paycheck to paycheck with that. And when it came to Christmas, there was no money for Christmas. And we had three kids. So my brother came over one day, and he handed me $1,000 in cash. And this was unprovoked, unasked for. He just handed it to me and said, hey, Merry Christmas. This isn't a loan. This is a gift. I want you to have it. I'm doing fine. And I know it's tough when you first come out of school before things start getting better. And holy smokes, that the emotion that was there, the love, the gratitude that I felt for that, and also the responsibility that I felt for that money. I felt like it was sacred funds. I wasn't going to go waste it on something frivolous. I wasn't going to go out and buy an Xbox with it, right? I was going to buy something that was meaningful for my kids. And I really spent that using a lot of thought and compassion towards what the gift meant to me. I think that really underpins what you're saying, Cody. The closer you are to the gift giver, the more responsible you feel and for the gift received.
So if you receive it from your church, you're going to be responsible to them.
Yeah, your congregation, if you're in there in your congregation and they're supporting you and helping you with your rent, then when it comes cleaning time for the building and volunteers are asked for, hopefully you're standing first in line.
Right. Yeah, we have a lot of things that when we go to church, there are programs in place to help individuals. And I'm in a position now in the church where I do help people, you know, do service projects or most commonly move people when they move in or out.
You're on the front line. I know you're calling in the church.
Yeah.
And it is the front line when people need assistance. You're the person they call for the actual physical labor to get things done. I know the bishop in the church provides financial support.
Right.
And you have to get authorization through that. But you actually see in individuals' specific circumstances to then report back to the bishop what they need.
Right, and make recommendations and whatnot and organize. Like if someone needed help moving into a new location, boxing up their stuff, moving it into a U-Haul, all that kind of stuff. And that's the principle that I've always used is...
How many hours a week would you say you put into that calling?
Probably just organizing, probably 5 hours, 10 hours a week, just organizing. And then if we actually have a move, then you're on Saturday, you know, 3 hours doing that kind of stuff. So it can get taxing, but I don't mind that. And the reason I don't mind it is because we have a philosophy of relying on yourself first. If there's too much for you to do by yourself, go to your family members. If you don't have any, go to your friends. And if you've exhausted all of the resources, then come to me and let's organize some people to help you. And I think if you follow those principles, it leads to no more entitlement and it leads to a healthy relationship between the giver and the receiver.
We have to take a break. This is Life, Death, and the Law.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this. You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back to Life, Death, and the Law. We're talking about the choices that we have right now for the 2024 election. We have Joe Biden and Donald Trump. We should have more choices. I think that RFK should be a choice. I think that the Libertarian candidate, Chase Oliver, should be a choice. They're not, because we have a two-party system in this country. And that really frustrates me, because as much as I like the policies of Donald Trump and how the country ran in 2016 to 2020, the guy is insufferable. It's miserable for me to listen to him speak for more than 5 minutes at a time, because he's so self-aggrandizing. And I also think that he believes that government can solve a lot of the issues that should be solved on a personal level. So, Thomas, you were talking about your role in your church, about helping people that need assistance. And a lot of people believe that that's the government's job. Libertarians do not. So how does your church play that role?
Yeah, I think my personal policy when I am trying to coordinate with people who need help is I want to hear from the individual. It's an individual matter. If, you know, I find that if I hear from someone down the street that somebody needs help, or if I hear from their neighbor or something like that, I typically get a bigger, like more aggrandized ask of what they want me to do, or they want individuals to volunteer their time for. When I hear from the individual themselves, my experience is that they're very conservative of what they're asking for, because it, you know, it's a hit to the pride. No one likes to ask for help, but it's important to have that humility when you realize you're getting something that isn't yours, whether that be time, whether it be money. And I think that's the missing piece, is when you've got a check coming into a government debit card 2 times a month, you don't know where that's coming from. All you know is you can swipe it anywhere and it buys something. You get to be dependent on that, and you get to the point where you're entitled and you think that it's owed to you at some point. And really all that is just dipping into your neighbor's pockets and taking money out of their paycheck to be able to support that. And I don't think that's right.
Without any appreciation whatsoever, because you're not even going to your neighbor and asking for it.
Right.
Or demanding it. You're going to some entity pie in the sky that has no face, no feelings, and therefore you owe no gratitude. I want to go back to some other points that Chase Oliver makes for libertarianism, and see what we think on those.
Pay more? We have more.
No, you as an individual, rich or poor, can probably better allocate your resources and figure out a better way to spend your money than a government bureaucrat who has no idea who you are.
Unlike many political candidates, Oliver learned about the world by working regular jobs.
Well, I started out in restaurants. Yeah, my first job was being a dishwasher, but then I basically did every job you could do in a restaurant, got my expertise in the field, and was actually helping to advise new entrepreneurs how to open restaurants. And then from there, I moved into the world of logistics, where I got an appreciation for free markets, moving goods from one side of the world to the other.
The third party could end up playing spoiler for Democrats and for President Joe Biden.
Democrats and Republicans complain he's going to be a spoiler. He's going to elect the other guy.
You can't spoil something that's already rotten. And if you look at the approval ratings of Congress and the president, they're always below 50%, or even in Congress, below 20%. People are sick and tired of the two-party system.
In Georgia, it's headed for a December 6th runoff election.
2 years ago, Oliver forced a runoff in Georgia's Senate race.
Both candidates are fighting for the 80,000 Georgians who voted for Libertarian Chase Oliver.
You're better off nominating no one than Chase Oliver.
Some Republicans trash Oliver.
He supported the employer vax mandates, which is the least libertarian policy in human history.
But Oliver doesn't support government vaccine mandates.
I support the right of property owners to determine the business that happens on their property or in their business.
You're just saying let a private owner require whatever he wants on his property.
Yeah. You as a consumer then have a choice to, will I work at this business or will I take my talent elsewhere? And I would say a lot of businesses who required vaccines probably lost a lot of good talent to firms that didn't. That's the way the marketplace is supposed to react, not government.
I haven't heard anything too crazy yet.
Yeah, that sounds right.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I can't disagree with anything that he said there. The government should leave you alone. The government should be there to provide the support that is necessary to protect our freedoms from other individuals in our society, but more particularly the government itself. And so that is my big concern right there. For example, how does the government protect my rights against the government. Well, if there's a law that infringes my rights, let's say the seatbelt law, okay? I don't want to wear a seatbelt. I think that is an invasion on, it's imposing an act upon me that is not protecting anybody else's right to life, liberty, or property, right? If I decide to not wear a seatbelt, that's not harming anybody else. It's only harming myself if I decide to do that. So why would you make a law against that? That's not the government's role. So then I can appeal to the courts to say that law is unconstitutional. The only laws that we agree to are laws that fit within the confines of protecting our rights to property and freedom of movement and what we do with our cars and our inside our cars with our seatbelt, as long as it doesn't hurt anybody else. A speed limit, on the other side, I can see that protects other people from being rammed into and losing their life and losing their liberty. So that, yes, I understand. And each law that is out there, people say, well, it's complex, it's complicated. It isn't. It shouldn't be. There's three pillars that they should stand on. Does that law protect other people from infringement upon their life, liberty, or property? If that law does not meet one of those requirements, then I don't think that's a government function.
I think it's a good template to work off of. If you're outside those three pillars,
that template is called the Constitution.
Right, and it sounds like people need to get more acquainted with the template.
So Ben Shapiro doesn't like this guy. He goes out of his way to sling mud at him and say that he is not libertarian. And he comes out and explains his position. I think it would have been better for Ben to invite him on a show and have an interview with him, and so he could explain what he meant by employer-mandated vax. I tend to agree with that. As an employer myself, if I was fearful and bought in to the idea that the vaccine would prevent deaths and keep my clients and my customers healthier or even make my business more successful, then I think that I should be able to require whatever of my employees, as long as it's not, obviously I can't require, you know, we're not getting into devious acts and things like that, right? Mm-hmm. So what's your thoughts on that, Cody?
Oh, it is a slippery slope, because I mean, at what point do you, get into somebody's healthcare? You know, uh-huh. If you start requiring, you know, vaccines and things. So, yeah, I think err on the side of freedom.
Okay, you know? So what do you think about employer-mandated? Me as an employer, can I mandate vaccines?
I mean, I guess you can. You have that right. I mean, same thing as you mandate what qualifications you want. You know, what kind of degree you want your employees, you know?
Right now as an employer, I'm not legally eligible to require a credit report and not hire somebody because of a credit report or a background report. And I think that's ridiculous, because any federal job that you apply for, what are they going to ask for?
They want an apartment, they're going to have to.
Exactly. But it's even more hypocritical, because the federal government is the one making the rule that I can't do that as an employer, but they are the biggest employer in our country, and they require a credit report and a criminal background report for every federal job you apply for. So they can do it, but I can't do it. Why? What are their justifications for doing it? Well, it's obvious. They don't want criminals who have a history and a propensity of stealing or defrauding people to work for them. They don't want people that have bad credit history that are going to be more susceptible to being
manipulated,
bribed to work for them. So they require those things, but they don't let me require it. That's where I'm much of the libertarian. So basically, I think that employers should be allowed to do anything they feel is appropriate to protect their employees and to perpetuate their business, as long as it doesn't pass. What am I trying to say here? I guess I don't know where the threshold would be, but I think we've got to err on the side of letting them do anything that they could reasonably justify is in the best interest of their customers and their employees, as giving them the benefit of the doubt they see fit.
Yeah, I think that Milton Friedman, Thomas Sowell talk a lot about this. Like, if you want someone to be penalized for their bias, let them be racist. If they don't want, if an employer doesn't want to hire a certain race because they don't like them, then make them pay the price and let all that talent go somewhere else and let them go out of business. You don't need to protect people. Like, we're not that fragile. And the government, I feel like, is nannying, you know, us to death.
And they do a terrible job every time that they try to implement a system. It reminds me of Australia. Australia's, you know, that scenario where they had an issue. I think it was originally with like rabbits, and so they introduced dingoes.
Mm. Huh.
And so then they had an issue with dingoes, and so they introduced something else, and it just kept catapulting into the next catastrophe. And so that's what happens with the government. We say, well, we can't have racism. Good. Let's not have racism on a federal level. You cannot discriminate on the basis of race or sex or religion on a government level. Now, those are three characteristics that I think we all agree upon should not have discrimination by our government. But for a free people to be able to discriminate, like it or not, that is the definition of freedom. I should be allowed to, not that I want to, and I don't want to like put a target on my back here, but be allowed to discriminate if I'm free and then suffer the consequences or benefit from understanding that inclusion to a certain extent benefits my business.
Yeah, it lets you know who not to deal with. You know, if somebody's using language you don't want or is acting a certain way, I don't want to deal with them. I don't want to give them my business.
Right.
Yeah.
I watched this Babylon Bee satire last night, and it was about Boeing. And I'll play it. It's really interesting. Hold on a second. Let me find it. You know which one I'm talking about? Have you guys seen this one?
Nope.
Oh, good. I'd love to see your first take on this. How do I get back to my history?
Go to the three lines on the top left by premium.
I'm going to bring up one more YouTube channel so I can go right back to that.
Okay. What is that squirreliness?
Yeah, I do hear that.
Yeah.
Right there. Oh,
there's one. Hi, I'm Bob Boeing, founder of Boeing. You know, flying can be a stressful experience for people of all ages. Here at Boeing, we know you feel safest when you're flying on a plane made by a company that above all else prioritizes diversity. Sorry, Steve. Welcome aboard, Black Woman Steve.
I don't have to use this, right? You do know I'm just an actor.
Classic Black Woman Steve. As you're flying through the air at 30,000 feet in a pressurized metal tube being propelled by highly explosive jet fuel, you can rest easy knowing that you're in a Boeing. And at Boeing, we have stringent standards, making sure to hire our airplane technicians based on the single most important factor, what they like to do in the bedroom. Now, we institute regular surprise certification checks to make sure everyone is qualified. Show of hands. Who's gay?
I am. I'm a Methodist.
Close enough. We know when you board an airplane, your first question is, who's the pilot? Well, there's no need to worry your pretty little head about that when you're on a Boeing. Our new oppression detection technology scans the pilots to make sure they're part of a marginalized group, like women, Pacific Islanders, or even the blind.
Access granted. Straight male detected.
Hello,
look, looks like this white man is flapping up again.
So next time a door falls off one of our planes, you can take pride in knowing it was slapped on there by a minority or a gay, or maybe both. And when your plane is coming in hot and the landing gear fails to deploy, just remember, all our technicians have had extensive DEI training, and most of them are LGBTQ. Only a bigot would have a problem with that. I mean, you're not a bigot, are you?
That's good.
So there's diversity for you, right?
Yep.
And we're seeing that in universities, because universities, most of the time, they're just talking philosophy and theory. They're not actually out there doing. They don't actually have to have a bottom line that they're responsible for. And so they can preach this stuff without being responsible for the actual effect that it has in the marketplace. Now, here at this law firm, we're actually very diverse, but not because we're seeking diversity. It's because we want the best talent, and that just happens to come in a lot of different shapes and colors and sizes. We got to take a break. We'll be back. This is Life, Death, and the Law.
Hey, Yuma, Dave Ramsey here. If you listen to our show or know anything about us, then you know I only recommend products and services I trust and I believe in. That's why when it comes to protecting your assets and planning for your loved one's future, you've got to call my friends Sean Garner and Adam Hansen at the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen. I encourage you to take the first step and attend a free, no-pressure seminar and learn all of your options. The firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen has been educating the Yuma community for over 40 years, and this is the only area of law that they practice. Sean and Adam believe in giving free education to help people make smart decisions about their assets and help them leave a legacy for their family that they can be proud of. Schedule a free personal consultation today. Call 783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back to Life, Death, and the Law. We're talking about the Libertarian candidate that none of us will really get the opportunity to see in the Oval Office, because this is a two-party race. It's either going to be a Republican or it's going to be a Democrat. And in my mind, they're both highly flawed individuals. Obviously, I'm going to vote for the one that has the better policies and has taken our country and with a track record of having our country's best interest in mind, and that's Donald Trump. But boy, I have a hard time telling my kids to look at this individual and his character and listen to him speak on a daily basis and say, model your life after that. That's a true American right there. Maybe it is a true American, but it's a sad state for America when that's the case. I also think that even Donald Trump believes that government can solve way more than it needs to. And when it does, it takes the private citizen out of their role and takes away their freedom. The private citizen can do everything the government can do for the most part, with the exception of national defense and policing within the country, that a private citizen could do. And that's what Oliver Chase, his argument is here. So let's play a little bit more about Chase Oliver. Two first names.
In support of the transing of the kids.
I'm not in favor of transing or not transing. I'm in favor of parents making determinations that's the best for their family. And I'm not a healthcare expert, and neither has Ben Shapiro.
He talks openly about sending kids to drag queen story hour. There are actual pictures of him, like, with drag queens.
Oh, no. Photos of me with drag queens? Oh, my.
He says the best way to export liberty is with an open border.
You would let anybody in who's not a criminal who wants to come?
Yeah, I think you should come through a port of entry, declare who you are, and if you're not someone who's dangerous, yeah, come right through.
How can we have completely open...
Okay, so that's an interesting one. You might have missed it, but he said, yeah, I think that we should allow people to come through a port of entry and declare who you are. Okay. I've said for a long time, if you can get on an airplane, right, if you have enough security clearance to get on an airplane, then you should be able to come into the country. That's my view on immigration. But at the same time, we've got to get rid of this safety net welfare program where you come into the country just to take advantage of all the handouts that are being produced at the expense of the people that are working and paying taxes. So yes, we can have open immigration as long as they participate as working members of society. And if they're not, then they are going to have to find some charitable organization that's going to support them. It's not going to be my tax dollars forced out of my wallet to pay for their existence here in the country.
Yeah, and I think what better way to integrate them into the community? You know, if you're an immigrant, I could imagine that would be very difficult to come to a foreign country and not really have any friends, or maybe you don't have family in here. But if you're struggling and you need help and you go to your local church and you develop that community, that's good for everybody.
Yeah. What I see, I don't go down Fourth Avenue that often just because I live out in the counties. But when I do, it's usually on a Sunday afternoon, I see groups generally of 4 to 5 of males that are ages between 18 and 45 walking together. And they're very likely immigrants that have just crossed the border. And how can I say that? And how can I stereotype them like that? Because I've been down to the border and I've watched them cross, and they come in groups of those sizes and of those age groups. And I'm not actually offended at that at all. I want people that are of working age to come into our country and to offer their talents and contribute to working society. What I don't want is to hand them a $2,500 gift card and a plane ticket to wherever they want to go, and then put them up in a hotel for free at the expense of me, my family, or the citizens of whatever city they get shipped to.
I mean, those are totally different things, though. I mean, at the end of the day, it's the system that we've built with these safety nets versus just an immigration policy. I mean, yeah, I grew up in this region. I remember going to Mexico like it was any other place, you know, like you go across, yeah, you come back.
For lunch.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So why is it more difficult now? You know, what are we doing? Why can't we allow this form of tourism?
Mm-hmm. And when I say that I see those groups of men, is it making me racist? No, I didn't even say what race they were. I just know when, just by... they're holding generally shopping bags. They're walking towards a specific hotel that I know has been sequestered by the government and leased out by the government for this purpose. And I see the buses loading up and hauling about, I don't know, what fits on a bus, 70 at a time, north. And that, I have a problem with the government stepping in right off the bat, lining them up because they've come through not a port of entry, but a big hole in the wall. Walk through the port of entry. Seal the wall. Walk through the port of entry. I don't want anybody walking onto a plane, right? Not that I'm a fan of the TSA, but I do want to actually have somebody that has an ID that can be verified that they're not on the terrorist list. Go through it. Walk through a metal detector. Get on the airplane. Fine with me. If they can do that, I'm okay with them being in the country, but I'm not okay paying for them to subsist here in the country.
I mean, they're not even going through gates. I mean, or they're going through gates. They're not going through ports. I mean, the Border Patrol are opening up sections of the wall to allow them to pass.
Right.
I mean, they're really bending over to...
Yeah, and we saw that when Greg Abbott tried to put up razor wire to you know, patch up the holes that were left in the border wall, and you know, Joe Biden and his administration sued him for doing that. So let's get back. I guess with the border aspect, I think we're pretty much in agreement. I don't think that there should be no borders, but I think that there should be a pretty transparent port of entry that everybody has to go through, kind of like we did, Cody, as kids going back and forth to Mexico, or I did when I lived in Northern Idaho. And Thomas, did you ever go to Canada when you lived in Northern Idaho?
No, I was a little too far away, but I had a lot of friends that did.
It's 2 hours.
I'm not going to drive that far. Okay. For Canada.
All right. Well, we went there, and it was no big deal. We would travel across. We had to have an ID.
You didn't get Canadian health care when you got there.
No,
you know,
exactly.
That's the problem, yeah.
Right, and we would come back, and it was fun. It was just a fun little excursion to go there and come back. That's the type of border I like. That's the type of border I enjoy. Now it's very difficult, actually, to get to Canada and back. They've really closed those ports of entry down.
Yeah, I just dovetail off that. I had Canadian friends that would come down into Washington to shop because our prices were cheaper here, yeah, in America. Now they don't do that very much anymore because we're becoming more on par. And I think it's largely to do with our welfare policies and our misspending that we have in the country.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, let's go back. Let's see what Chase Oliver has to say.
Borders when America has become a welfare state and people would come here to freeload.
We need to be able to walk and chew gum at the same time. We can oppose the welfare state while fixing the immigration crisis.
Oliver is the most pro-immigration candidate.
Truth out now!
He's also the most anti-war candidate.
I started out in the Democratic Party as an anti-war protester, opposing the Bush wars. We had a candidate for president who ran on a lot of promises to end those wars.
I will get our troops home. We will bring an end to this war.
He failed on every one of those promises, and it drove me out of the Democratic Party because I realized it wasn't really an anti-war party. It was an anti-Bush party masquerading as an anti-war party.
George W. Bush authorized 48 recorded drone strikes over his 8 years in office. Obama launched 52 in his first year alone.
The war machine was in both major parties, and I'm glad I found the Libertarians because they're the real anti-war party.
Close all overseas bases.
We have to stop being the world's policeman. It's created further destabilization, less trust in the United States, and ultimately can make it more dangerous at home and abroad.
The current...
Okay. So there are several issues there. One is, yes, are both parties perpetuating war indefinitely? I think so. I think that, and this is my conspiracy theory, but it's backed up by a lot of evidence, and I'm not the only one that has it, that... the government wants perpetual war because what that allows them to do is choose their favorite entities to buy war supplies from. It takes taxpayer money to do that. So it's a redistribution of wealth from the general public to their pet projects, to their pet companies that are going to support their campaigns. And when there's a war, what do we need? We need political leaders that direct that war. We need to generally... the public unites behind the leader that is hopefully doing well on the war front, and it takes money out of our pocket and puts it into these private businesses that are creating these weapons of war. I don't like that. I think that's nefarious. I think that is really undermined. It not only is a total disregard for human life and what's going on in the wars, but it is stealing from us in a very, well, not so subtle way. But what about his opinion, and Thomas, I want to get your opinion on this, about taking out all of our foreign bases. It seems to me that's a bit far. Having a foreign base isn't causing a war. Having a foreign base is a deterrence for a war, in my opinion. But I've never been a soldier, and I'm not very educated on military strategy. What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, so I'll go ahead and caveat as well. I'm not the foremost military strategist, but I do know a little bit, and I've done some training. But yeah, that's a tougher one to swallow for me. I think that's short-sighted. If you bring all of our military influence back to the homeland, you're just going to let something fester and grow outside in the world in foreign countries without any deterrent. And by the time it gets to you, it may be too late. So I'm not a fan of that policy 100%. I think that there is some good that America does just by having a presence in destabilized places. And while the media would tell you that we're hated in some countries, which we are.
Or not even destabilized places, but stable places like France.
Sure.
Right?
Germany.
Turkey.
Japan.
Yeah.
I think we should have our bases there so we're ready. And this goes along with George Washington all the way up to Ronald Reagan, that the best defense is to always be ready for war. Mm-hmm. And you prevent war by being willing and able to go to war with immense power and the potential to win it.
Yeah, and those foreign bases provide just a lot of tactical advantage by not having to set them up on the go if you were going to all of a sudden declare war and have to move everything out.
Right. You look at what happened with World War II. We were catapulted into World War II by Pearl Harbor. And then we had this Battle of Midway, which was an absolute miracle that we were actually to win that battle for Midway. Now, Midway is this atoll or this island that would have served as a base for Japan to invade or to drop bombs on the western coast. And had we not won that battle, then California was really gearing up for air raids from Japan. I think maintaining those types of foreign bases so if we need to ramp up that and not have another Iwo Jima or Okinawa, then that'd be great, because those were where the highest casualties occurred, is establishing bases in those posts where we could secure our interests overseas.
I'd be interested to know if he wants to let Hawaii and Alaska go from the Union, because that's the only reason we have them as states, is tactical positioning.
Well, I would originally, I don't know. Alaska, that's a hard sell for me. Alaska is so natural resource abundant, but that's a topic for another day.
I think it was mainly
Hawaii, for sure.
Yeah, I think Alaska was our defense against the Soviet Union.
Really?
Like, it's so close to Russia.
Yeah, it is, but when it was purchased.
Right.
I guess it was purchased from Russia.
So, I don't know. Okay. Yeah, that'll be a topic for another episode.
Yeah. Cody, any takes on that, or do you want to go? You want to play the next clip? He's got some more points to make.
We have like a minute left.
Okay, let's play another clip.
Fight between Israel and Hamas. What would you do?
Israel has a right to respond. The nature of their response has been very, very bad.
In genocide, ceasefire now.
Finally, when it comes to what I think is the biggest threat to America's future, Oliver doesn't pander like Republicans and Democrats do.
Okay, so a quick comment on that. He says Israel has a right to defend itself, but they've acted very badly. Okay, hold on a second. You're saying we ought to stay out of other foreign affairs, but then you go right in, and then we saw a part of his speech where he's saying, end genocide now. So he's categorizing Israel's response as genocide instead of just the abolishment of Hamas, which, of course, the Palestinians have elected as their rulers, and they just happen to be a terrorist group that wants to shoot missiles into Israel. I don't know how you do that other than what Israel is doing. I'm not a strategist for military. I know that most wars, though, it's going to be 100-to-1 civilian casualties for major conflicts when it comes to war. That's what happens in war. And so now that it's happening in front of our eyes and we can see it on social media, I don't think that that has veered differently. I just think that we're blind as to what happens during war and what has historically been war.
Yeah, I agree. I think we haven't had one for so long that we forget the tragedy and we forget the reality.
Right. I mean, how many combatants were there in World War II and how many people died? We know that it was upward towards 150 to 200 million died, but the combatants were somewhere around 30 to 40 million, and they didn't all die. So the civilian life casualty was much, much higher. That's all the time that we have for today. I'm a little bit, I can't use the word bummed.
Not distraught.
Dismayed?
Well, it's just...
we have whatever. Like so much more to talk about.
Yeah. We have no time.
No, we're like against...
Okay, you're going to have to crunch this down.
Yeah, there's going to be some cuts for sure.
Okay. In conclusion, I think we ought to have a way better option to have elections, and that is not the two-party system. The primaries need to be much more open to these other candidates, the RFKs out there, the Chase Olivers out there. We as a people need to become more educated on the policies and vote for individuals that support policies instead of just whoever gets the most air time. And I don't know how we do that, but until we do, we're not going to have a true republic driven by democratic vote. So that's all the time we have for today. This is Life, Death, and Law.
If you have questions or want to know more about something that was discussed today, please call the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson at 928-783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.